This is Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you the best of radio and information here at WBAI, as you're entitled to. Well, I don't know, you know, entitled, what a funny question. Entitled. Heard a recent conflict between a woman who bought a house and her children, and her child came to her and said, "Oh, what a great thing, you have a house now, I'd like to use it when you're not there." And she said, "Wait a minute, why should you use my house when I'm not here?" And she said, "Because I'm your daughter. I should be able to use your house when you're not there. It was a vacation home." And she had some conflict with that. I mean, the mother said, "Hey, I just would like to enjoy it first by myself before you come in here and start using it for yourself." So it brought about a question, a very important question. Who is entitled to what? Well, not only does it bring along the question of who is entitled to what, but what is entitlement itself? You see, in psychiatry, we have a word called a sense of entitlement. It's a phrase. It has a meaning, a very specific meaning. It's something that goes along with or is symptomatic, mostly, of a thing called narcissism. Narcissism is a big word, you know. Narcissism kind of makes you think of a real serious person looking in the mirror. The word narcissism comes from the character made famous by the Greek poet Ovid. Narcissus, who fell in love with his own reflection. In the story, Echo, his girlfriend, not his girlfriend, but Echo, falls in love with Narcissus and gets rejected. Now, I think this is very interesting that the word is Echo, because my associate pointed up to me that Echo is if to bounce back at you. You know, it's like, it's almost like you're an echo. You know, if you're a narcissist and you have somebody loving you, you use them to admire you. They are your echo. Well, Echo was the Greek character. Now, Narcissus was only able to love himself and no one else. He couldn't love anyone else. Conversely, Echo couldn't love herself, but could only completely lose herself in someone else. Did you ever meet anyone like that? Did you ever meet a person who loses themselves in their relationships? They lose themselves so much so that they don't exist. And you wonder to yourself, well, why are they doing that to themselves? Well, you see, just as we could see narcissism as a disorder whereby a person can't love anything but themselves, echoism is a disorder whereby a person cannot love themselves, but can only love someone else. You're hearing it first here on WBAI, Armand DeMel with you with The Positive Mind. Echoists, people who are not in their own personality and don't feel like they have a personality, but only have a personality as much as they love someone else, so they take on the other personality. They are admiring the other person. They're dedicated to the other person. They spend all their time thinking about the other person. And they don't exist without the other person. They don't exist without thinking about them, longing for them, dreaming for them. You know what I mean? An echoist could easily become a fan of a rock star. You know, somebody follows you around, they could become one of these people who's a groupie. And why? Because they have no personality, because not because there's something wrong with them in the way that there's, you know, there's something really broken. It's just that they don't have a personality. They want a personality and they're searching for it in the likes of someone else. So this story today is about entitlement, but I want you to keep in mind two things. We have the narcissist and the echoist. And the echoist is those of you who have lost yourself in relationships and you couldn't find yourself. And you couldn't find yourself anywhere. And then finally you got out of the relationship. And then like 6 months later you woke up and you said, "Where was I? I was lost." Those of you, you know, Think of yourself as having an echotic syndrome, or the syndrome of being an echo. Armand DeMille with you. We've been working on it here at the DeMille Center. We've been working on the people who see themselves only as a reflection of someone else and not understanding or getting to their own personality. And what we found is that we've had to dig deep to uncover the original emotions that the person denied, and with that denied their true self. You see, somewhere early back then, a person did have a personality. As a baby, you had a personality. But then you found out that your personality was not convenient to those in charge, so what you did was you gave it up. You said, all right, I don't have one. I'll just be yours, Daddy, or I'll just be yours, Mommy, whatever you tell me to do. And then you go on later in life, and you find somebody else who you belong to. And that's it. You belong, you're them. An echoist. You are an echo. Where would an echo be without a caller? To call the echo, you know what I mean? You'd be hung out in space. So now, you know, in the story of Narcissus and Echo, Echo commits herself to Narcissus, and Narcissus tells Echo, I would never love you because it would give you power. And I would die rather than let you have power over me. So now you look at the narcissist as an interesting thing. The narcissist is not saying, I am only incapable of loving. It is saying, I refuse to give power to anyone. As a narcissist, I am constantly in a struggle to maintain my own power. And so the only thing I will allow you is to be a reflection of me, but I will not recognize you as a separate being. And of course, as an echo, what an echo always says is, well, then I give you power over me. But the narcissist says, but it doesn't matter, because I still won't love you. Now, one of the greatest problems facing young people of today is a thing called a narcissistic entitlement syndrome, NES. Don't you love these big words? People who suffer from NES often very quickly find themselves going to work, and then without knowing it, they're out of a job, or they get misplaced, or they get turned around. And I remember I had somebody who once came to work for me, and she said to me in advance, she said, I don't know why, but I work with people, and what happens is all of a sudden they're shifting my position, moving me around, and I don't understand it. They're letting me go, or they're just moving me to another job. And the trouble is, when you are working with somebody who has this kind of narcissism, they are always trouble in a company, because a narcissist does not believe that they should serve anybody. They believe everybody should serve them. Now, you see, if you're working in a business, one of the things you want to do is you want to serve your business so that the business recognizes you and gives you kind of advances accordingly. You want to do a good job so that you get recognition in advance. Well, a narcissist from the very beginning believes I shouldn't have to work at all. I'm here, and you're almost lucky to have me here. And you can look around an office and see narcissists. The bigger the office gets, you know, and especially if you get into things like design, or you get into advertising, or acting, or theater, narcissism is rampant. How does a director deal with a narcissist? If you're a movie director and you want to have, you have an actress or an actor, who's playing a role and you want to get the most out of them, you know what you must do? You must compliment them all the time. You can never criticize them because they cannot take criticism. A narcissist takes criticism with crushing blows. They hate you for it. They think there's something wrong for what you did, for criticizing them. So they don't take, there is no such thing as constructive criticism. The only way you can manipulate a narcissist who is working for you is to compliment them all the time. and they will eventually perform for you. Like if they're an actor or an actress or a dancer or something, and you want them to perform. I'm saying I'm using actor and actress, and I know that's dated. Everybody's an actor, right? Why shouldn't everybody be an actress? Who knows? Somebody made it up. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about entitlement. Now, entitlement is this amazing thing. Entitlement. A person sits at a restaurant, and they're sitting there, and the wait staff, is busy. And they're getting indignant. They're getting angry. I saw this happen the other day. I walked into a small luncheonette in the country, and this person was crying. And I said, why were you crying? She said, because that customer was so rude to me. Because I couldn't get to him in time, and he was just yelled at me and humiliated me and called me all kinds of names. Well, two things went on there, you know. We had two narcissists facing each other. Because the truth is, if you're a wait person and someone really yells at you and puts you down, you yell right back or do whatever you have to do to take care of yourself. But if you're a narcissist who's trying to use your position, you know, and you're looking to get admired, it's kind of an interesting thing when suddenly somebody criticizes you so badly. It crushes you. They can't take the criticism. And the person who was there, who was the customer, obviously thinking they were entitled, the big word, entitlement. I am entitled. Here's a question for you. Are you entitled to see your doctor on time when you make an appointment? Right? You make an appointment to see a doctor. You're somewhere within a healthcare system where it's an HMO. You show up for your doctor. I had this once. I showed up, and there were 9 people waiting for the very same appointment. For the same doctor who I liked, who was a good doctor. We had 9 people waiting. Now, that's a very interesting thing, 9 people waiting. And so if somebody doesn't show up, they don't care. They don't lose anything. If the person doesn't show up, you know, they have the next one to back it up. We run a psychotherapy center right here. We book one at a time. We can't afford to do 2 at a time because what if they both show up? We don't keep people waiting, but no, doctor's office. But now, does that make the doctor's office wrong? Are you entitled to better than that? Or because you have a cheap insurance plan, is that what you're really entitled to? And do you have a right to get upset and angry as you go there? I know people who go to see doctors. There's one woman I know, a famous doctor. You go to her, they say, bring a book. She gets to you when she wants to get to you. You know, when she's finished, she finally gets to you, but she wants you waiting there. And that's part of the deal. And they tell you that when you come. You may have to wait. You guaranteed you will have to wait. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. What are you entitled to? Are you entitled to fair trade? Are you entitled to? That word entitlement becomes very interesting because something happened in our society. The baby boomers, people born between 1940 and 1948, the baby boomers who are now the grandparents, grew up in a very strange environment because during this time from 1940 to now, or 1945 to now, the world gave you the impression that you were entitled to advances and money and things that you should get and a good education and stuff like that. Very, very different than in the world before then. The United States is a country of narcissism. It's a country of admiring somebody's achievements, and it says to you, look good, behave good, and we will celebrate you, and you have all the potential in the world, and you're entitled to everything. Well, it's kind of a disease. You know, I've treated people who have children. I remember one man who had a child, and he ran a big empire. He ran a business empire. And his child came to me for treatment, his son. And his son was really very depressed, or just sitting around doing nothing, a narcissistic kid. And I said to the son, I said, well, how come you're not working? Why are you? He said, because I'm going to inherit millions of dollars if my father dies. He says, as soon as my father dies, he says, I'm inheriting millions. So I said, but you hate your father. He says, yeah, I know, but I'm going to inherit my... Why should I work? He said, why should I start work when I know I'm going to inherit millions? So get this, his father is a person who can say about his son, my son, he's waiting for me to die. Imagine having a son who just waits for you to die. Well, the way we bring up our children nowadays, we bring them up with a sense of entitlement. What's mine is yours. We say things like, I'm only doing this for you. I'm making this to build it for you to have at some time. We convince our children that they don't have to earn their own way, but that we are going to earn a way for them, and that we are going to give things to them that they are entitled to. So we do not help our children grow on their own and develop their own sense of earning what they get. We instead give them a sense of entitlement. And I could tell you, you just look at any privileged school, and by that I mean any private school, and kids going to a private school and have them walking around. You want to see a sense of entitlement, you see it right there. It's amazing. It's amazing. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind at WBAI 99.5. We're talking about a sense of entitlement. Now, you've run into it. I know you have. Either you, if you're an echo personality, which many people are, and the echo personality is a person who has no personality of their own but is looking to attach themselves to someone else so that they could have an identity, you know? You want to be identified with somebody. You want to have... And usually the person you pick is somebody, you might pick a narcissist. The more empty your personality, the more empty will be the personality you choose, because a narcissist has no real personality. They have an image of self. They could be handsome, they could be good looking, they could be driving the best cars, they could have all the accoutrements and all the outside stuff that is admirable, and so by your being attached to them in some way, you become admirable. The narcissist. So if the real definition of a narcissistic entitlement syndrome can be defined as a person being inwardly focused and oblivious to the people and organizations around them that they are supposed to serve. Now, this is very beginning, very important, because if you become oblivious to the people around you you're working for, then you get into trouble in your company, of course. Now, you're not oblivious to the people who may serve you. Now, I could link the concepts of entitlement and narcissism in this syndrome, because the sense of entitlement most often has this narcissistic undertone, you know? People with NES see themselves as special. They believe they should have whatever they want regardless of the feelings of others, and they continually inflate themselves while putting others down. There are five major categories that people with this syndrome have, and we're going to talk to you about it because I'm sure you're going to call in with, well, I've been dying to talk to you anyway. We've been off air for so long. During the fun drive, we haven't been able to take our calls, so you'll be calling in today and we'll hear from you. Five signs of the narcissistic entitlement syndrome. First, you're generally preoccupied with fantasies of limitless brilliance, power, and success. You just think there is no limit. I could go forever. I think about it, and you think about your success and you picture yourself. Now, this is a disease of the performing arts, because to be a performing artist, you never think of yourself, I'm going to just be, I want to get on stage and I want to be part of a chorus line. No, you get on, you want to be a star, and you really want to be a star. So a narcissist has these fantasies, and, you know, people who are in the theater, they have fantasies about being great and having greatness, you know. So limitless power, limitless success is a fantasy. While this may be something that many people have, people with this entitlement syndrome generally will be quite consumed with these fantasies. Advancement and achievement are the most important thing to them, and they envision their environment around them as one where they should be the center of others' attention due to their achievements. That's how they see themselves. They see, well, you know, here I am. here I am, and this is how great I am, and I'm very important. And no matter what small role you give them, if you give them a little role, a little something, they'll make something great out of it. Second part of a person with this narcissistic entitlement syndrome is they generally have an exaggerated sense of self-importance that is not commensurate with their actual level of achievement. They expect to be recognized as superiors to others without a corresponding level of achievement. And this reminds me of the child running over to their parent with a smear of ink or crayons on a piece of paper and saying to their parents, "Look, Mommy, how great this is." Oh, my God, what happened to that child? Not, "Look, Mommy, look what I drew, what do you think?" But, "Look, Mommy, how great this is." As if you're expecting that everything you do is great on some level and should be appreciated. People with this also have generally exaggerated their achievements to others. So no matter what they achieve, it could be nothing. It could be a small thing. It could be they just got, you know, they're standing. I saw somebody standing online today for a performance, and they're standing online, and they're going to talk about how wonderful the experience of standing online and how special the experience of standing online is. Or somebody else may talk about what it's like to have a small part in the theater, you know, or if they were an extra and they just walked on, they'll exaggerate the importance of it. You know, "Well, the director looked at me very special as I was, you know, there it was." Okay. People with this narcissistic entitlement syndrome like to speak about their achievements, and do quite frequently. As a product of these fantasies, they'll also show a very arrogant attitude. And arrogance is a very important part of this. They believe they have special and should only associate and work with other people, so they tend to be a little hoi polloi. They tend to be a little, they just won't associate with anybody of a lesser status than them, unless they're getting real admiration. Now, third, people with this syndrome generally lack empathy and is unwilling to identify with the needs and feelings of others. Interpersonally, they're often quite exploitive. They take advantage of others in order to achieve their own ends. In this respect, people with NES often view those around them as objects to be manipulated to be in service of their ultimate fantasies of power. Now, the fourth part of it, people with NES are most often very envious of those around them with advantages they do not have, and they believe that others are envious of them. This is a very interesting thing that you meet with people with a sense of entitlement. They believe that people envy them. Now, they haven't achieved much, you know what I mean? But they will talk about how people envy them. So, in other words, it's not as if they just build themselves up. They create them, their importance. This could take the form of paranoia. The form of paranoia. Paranoia is worrying that people are mad at you and people want to hurt you. So very often, somebody who's this sense of entitlement believes that since I believe I'm so great, I believe you hate me because I'm so great and that you want to hurt me. So very often it comes around as a narcissistic fear. Are we getting down to the end of this, my friends, and then we're going to talk with you. Fifth, they require excessive admiration. They need constant approval from those around them. The narcissistic entitlement syndrome person believes that he or she should always be admired by other people. And being admired is a constant. They must have it. So this is kind of what we're dealing with, my friends. You're dealing with it. Now, when you're dealing with it, as we said, there's always two sides to it. Because nobody is the victim of a narcissist unless they are giving themselves away. Now, I want to give you an example that comes from fraud, and it comes from shysters, and it comes from... There's a series in British television that was called... I forgot what it was called. It was all about the fraud business. And it was about people who were going around ripping off other people. And it was a series, an English series. And it was a very good series because part of what they believed is they believed they will not steal from anybody who's honest. They will only steal from dishonest people. And the way they could commit a scam is they always appealed to the greed and the illegality of other people. So if you could make people think that they could get or earn money for less than, for not have to earn it, but, you know, if they could buy, hey, let me sell you these stolen clothing. You know, let me sell you these stolen articles. And these articles aren't stolen, they're just cheap reproductions. But they look like stolen articles. It's the greed and larceny of other people that they capitalize on. So in other words, in order for you to be a victim of somebody who is giving you, who is a shyster, you have to be a part of the shyster yourself. You have to be a part of you is looking to get a good deal and steal. And, you know, like you go to buy a car and the guy says, look, this car was owned by a lady who just drove it to church and back. That's why it only has 10 miles on the odometer and it's 15 years old. The car is 15 years old. You know, there's a part of you that, but listen, don't tell my boss that I'm selling you this car. That's all you have to hear. Right? Because you're so special. There it is, that part of you, that greed comes up, that larceny comes up. Well, narcissists are like that too. You become the victim of a narcissist when there's a part of you that is dying to connect because you don't feel connected to yourself. And what happens over time is you do it and you get involved in it for a good period of time, either as a narcissist or as an echo of a narcissist. And then as you get older and older, you say to yourself, wait a minute, maybe I'm good enough. And, you know, I think eventually everybody becomes a person who doesn't feed a narcissist. You know, it's very hard to get a rise. If you're a narcissist, like if you're up on stage, you don't get many older people standing up and cheering, not because they're weak, but they're not making you their whole lives. They've seen you and the person before you who look just like you, and they've seen it a number of times, so they don't invest themselves any longer in trying to create this thing for themselves. The younger people do. Now, but, you know, the trouble is you have to wait till you get so far in age before you can become wise enough to not feed this syndrome and be a victim of it, you know? And the trouble is most people just wait. And they wait, and then they get burned a number of times. And then that's what they do. And because they get burned so many times, eventually they get burned so many times, eventually what they do is they eventually get cold and they say, no, I'm not gonna respond anymore. But the young people, what they do is they have an advantage. They learn about themselves. They learn about themselves and they learn about who they are. And so they don't go out there just saying, either being on the end of, I am somebody to be admired and I'm entitled to everything. Because if they find their soul through whatever manner, if it's through meditation, through psychotherapy, through self-searching, whatever it is, through good friends, whatever you find, if you find yourself, you don't become a victim to this. But the people who do become a victim are the people who can't find themselves. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be taking your call. Play a little music. Something special, and when we come back, we will take your calls as well at 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900. Be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. Thank you.
c'est moi vous parler. C'est fou, moi fou, si mon continue. Qui m'en est roulé, qui m'en est roulé, mon frère.
Mais qui m'en est roulé, moi, à main.
Tu l'es nous maillé, maillé Venezuela.
Mais qui m'en est roulé, moi, à main.
Tu l'es chanolo, en barlo, la Guyano.
Mais qui m'en est roulé, moi, à main.
Mais qui s'a roulé, doudou, qui s'a roulé, mon frère.
Magic of Cali, K-A-L-I, my friends, from the album Debranché, which comes from the island of St. Vincent, and I don't think it's available here in America, but it's nice to bring it to you anyway. Hey, listen, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about the sense of entitlement, and we're taking calls soon at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. Here's a question for you, or here's an interesting observation. When you have two people who are, let's say, the average young couple, they get married nowadays, and they're both very proud, and they both are narcissists, and they both are very appearance-oriented, and they both go to the gym, and they both wear the best clothing, and they both get cosmetic surgery, and they look terrific, and they both, you have two narcissists now. And so you have two narcissists who get together, and then somewhere down the line, they admire each other, they turn towards each other, but now they have a power struggle. Now, when there's a power struggle between two narcissists, it is amazing. It is amazing to see a power struggle because it's almost like they hate each other. I see this in couples all the time. Couples come to see me, and I see a narcissistic power struggle. It's not like you have an echo and a narcissist here, you know. In this case, you have two narcissists in battle with each other over who is the king. You know, who's going to be on top. And it's a fight. It's a struggle. It's kind of an amazing thing. Armand DeMille at 212-209-2900. Have you ever been wrapped up in this? Have you ever been on either side of it? Have you ever been somebody who recognized themselves as a narcissist and decided to challenge it? Because, you know, the one thing about narcissism is it's so fragile. It's so fragile that if somebody challenges you and proves to you that you're not so good, your entire structure breaks down. You lose everything. You fall apart. These people commit suicide. A narcissist, you know, when you hear about guys jumping out of buildings down on Wall Street, that's a narcissist who got completely wounded, and we have a word called a narcissistic wound, where the guy just said, no, I'm entitled to you know, make a fortune and be, and nowadays, where a lot of this is happening, they felt like they just couldn't handle it anymore. And you'll see they have all the things in the world that might be the best things. They have good suits, they have a nice wife, they have a good car, they have good children in the schools. But they just can't stand the wound to their personality, so out they go. They can't take it. So it's a very fragile state of mind, even though when you look at it, it looks like it's not. They look like they're in all power. 212-209-2900, Michael. I would like to take one of the calls right now. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Good afternoon, Armand. How are you?
I'm great.
I'd like to thank you for taking my call. My question, you really struck a nerve. It's been something that I've been dealing with a lot with my oldest son. And as you went through sort of the lists of narcissistic behaviors, I noticed all of them sort of pertain to my son is only 10 years old, and I'm really struggling with how to help him or exercises I can do to make him realize how to work through his narcissism.
Now, you and your wife are separated?
No, we're still together.
Okay, so what happens when you say you are trying to teach him? right? Is he very close to your wife?
He is. I think he is very close to my wife, yes.
I mean, very close.
Yeah, I left work a few years ago to spend more time at home to try and be a more active father, and my wife, and work on my relationship with my wife a lot more. And in hindsight, that's helped dramatically with our children. Obviously, the relationship I have with my wife has blossomed, and that has helped. But some of these tendencies of his narcissism, his dissatisfaction in any sport that he starts playing, he can be very good at it in the beginning, and then once he shows signs of not being good, he quits. He gets extremely upset.
Yeah.
And one of your signs also, when he, if I show dissatisfaction with him, he gets very angry and very upset.
Now, do you and your wife agree that you have to help him out with this by showing him that you two, both of you, can live through disappointment and you two both can model the opposite of this? Or do you have difficulty with your wife getting her to collude with you?
We have.
This should be.
8 years prior, we had a lot of difficulty with it. So I see where it has come from. We're working very diligently in working through that, and we've made some tremendous, wonderful strides.
So does your son see you dealing with disappointment?
He does, yes.
And failure. So give me an example, like something that you would tell him that you tried to do and you couldn't do.
Any type of carpentry around the house.
Yeah. Okay, what about
little
it?
Little projects like that, that I just am not successful at, even when we play golf or if we do any sport. You know, there's lessons to be learned within every game.
That's right. There are lessons to be learned everywhere, and the more you demonstrate it. Now, you said something very important. Somewhere a while back, you realized things weren't going so well with your family.
Correct.
And you left your work to be able to do that. How did you support the family? How do you support the family with by leaving work? What did you do, set up a home cottage industry or something?
I can only, you know what? I still keep myself active wherever I can. Do work that wouldn't interfere with times when my family would be home at some times. I still do work at maybe one or two nights a week, but most of the work I try and do between 9 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the morning through churches or through people that I know within the community that just need small jobs done, and I'm able to sort of, I take it month by month. And year by year, and it seems to be working, but the value of sort of the family seems to be much more important than any financial.
I see, and from what you're saying, I would say that you could just continue with what you're doing, which is giving a demonstration of what it's like to be able to go through life and all the difficulties of life without having to teach a lesson every time you do it. Just let your son see you doing it.
Okay, because sometimes he has stopped listening to me when I
Right, know. Because when you preach, it doesn't do any good.
That's my problem currently.
Yeah, because let him see you as an example. Let him see you as somebody who just does it, you know, and goes through sadness and goes through disappointment and comes out of it okay.
Thank you so much, Armand.
My pleasure. Thanks. What's your name?
My name's John.
John, thanks for calling in.
I'll see you soon.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, Armand. My name is Sally.
Hello, Sally.
I am married to a narcissist. Recently, I decided to separate from him due to his extreme narcissistic behavior, self-centered, oblivious to family, the whole family situation.
No, I disagree. What did you say your name was? Sally?
Sally.
Uh-huh. No, what really happened, Sally, was you took more value in yourself.
Exactly, yes, I have to.
That's what changed was he didn't change. He didn't become more. He was the same as he always was. You became the unecho. You know, you suddenly said, wait a minute, I think Sally's going to grow. So,
right. So
I pity the poor guy.
Oh, I pity him, too.
He's stuck in this world of performance and just living like an automatic man. But you changed, and this is great that you made the change for yourself.
How do you continue to maintain a relationship we have a child, you know, who if I pay even now, that we're just separated, you know, we're trying to work out the specifics of either going forward with some kind of divorce or maybe, you know, it's, but at the same time, doesn't want to let it go. And I guess in a sense, I don't want to let the relationship go, but I don't want to work on it either because I feel not great when I'm in it. You know, I don't feel good being in that relationship.
Well, what are you expecting of him? You expecting him to be different than he is?
I guess I am, but
okay,
I know
so that's where we start.
Happen.
That's where we start. Let's start with that.
Okay.
Not that it's never going to happen, because you know people get older, and when they get older, things change. But mm-hmm. it's not that you're dependent on the change. Learn
okay.
to be in reality with him. Learn to see him the way he is. Understand this narcissistic self. Understand that he doesn't have himself. See if he would go to therapy with you. Did the two of you ever go to therapy together?
We went to therapy, and actually, he does go to a therapist. We went for a little while, and it's strange to say, but the therapist totally bought everything that he said, you know, all the illusions of grandeur, you know, all his business adventures, and I know exactly what was true and not true, you know, whereas the man actually told me, the therapist told me, like, what are you doing? Don't you see you've excluded him from your life because you're not allowing him to somehow work full time and just ignore the family? I mean, I was expecting him to at least pay attention to the child. Instead, he looks at our daughter as if she's he's competing with her. It's like this bizarreness that, you
yeah,
know...
it's
you know,
funny.
It's very funny, and you're almost like, my God, you're not 2 years old, and then he'll have like a little
with
her.
Well, Sally, let's try it one more time. Just because you saw a therapist who's a bum doesn't mean...
Yeah, see the therapist who's a bum.
Doesn't mean...
So, yeah, okay.
Doesn't mean that they're all like that. You just in your old, think about how good you are at selecting things. First of all, you selected this husband. Then you selected this therapist.
No, he selected the therapist.
Oh, he did so well. But it worked for him because he's still going, right?
He's still going. Yeah, he loves him. He thinks he's just fantastic. He's great, which is, you know, maybe somehow.
So maybe you got it for the sake of the child. You decide to find another therapist for the two of you to go to without putting down his therapist and find somebody who's really worth their while. I got a couple of people I know who are just fantastic, and they would look at his personality, not challenge it, look at yours and not challenge it, but they wouldn't buy it either. They won't get lost in it, and they would help you in such a way that it would be a better chance for your kids.
But the other
important thing, Sally, is just keep working on your finding yourself, you know, because the amazing thing is that's what you've done over the last couple of years. You're beginning to shine. And, you know, by the time you're ready to not need him anymore.
Actually, Armand, I don't need him anymore. I don't know if part of me said, I want to, you know, maybe still not let it go, but I guess my whole illusion of, like, being married was like, oh, now I'm a failure. I failed my child. But that's not it. You know what? I would fail my child staying in that relationship.
Good
going. And constantly battle with him to make sure that, you know, she gets equal time or he get equal time. You know, I was just juggling too much, like, you know, personality issues with him as far as relating to her. Now going through with separation papers, he'll give me separation papers, which he has, and it's unbelievable what he has in there from a narcissistic
Well, narcissistic, viewpoint. Especially narcissistic men have great difficulties with separation.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing the way they keep strings out for everybody. I run a men's group where I have just men in a group, and we were talking recently about this concept of separation. We were talking about what it's like to separate, because it's one of men's greatest difficulties. And it's somehow it gets trained out of you. They can't make this separation. And so what you have is you have somebody who is just, you know, it sounds like he's in some way never gotten out of his adolescence. Mm-hmm. And he's stuck in this spot, you know?
Right, he's stuck in this. I mean, it's so narcissistic that he's like giving me these papers. Look them over, get them back to me. And, you know, and by the way, you want to have sex?
Yeah, I understand.
You're just like, oh, my God, are you for real? You know, it's like, you know, at the same time, you know, we'll go out for dinner with our daughter together, and we get along amicably as long as, you know, it's like, oh, that's great. Great.
So, Sally, the best thing you could do is keep getting Sally developed, you know?
That's what I'm working on.
Get Sally away from the echo, and you're going to have your own voice.
All right, well, I greatly appreciate you taking my call.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Back with The Positive Mind, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Hope. I seem to attract narcissistic people. Is there a specific type of person they look for?
Yes.
I don't understand. My father...
Yes, yes. Hey, Hope, do you have your radio on in the background?
No, I turned that off.
Oh, great, 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 Hope. Yes,
I'm next to the magnet at my job.
What did you say?
I'm next to the magnet at my job, though.
There's a magnet at your job?
Yeah, in the door lock. Don't worry.
Oh, I thought it was a person. The magnet, you know, like you got a magnetic personality. Well, that's kind of narcissistic. Yes,
yeah.
They are attracted to people. The narcissist is most attracted to a person who doesn't have a great developed sense of self.
But
because
that's the problem. I don't know. I'm also pretty low maintenance, like the way I carry myself and my clothes. I'm not, you know, I'm not high maintenance. It doesn't bother me that I'm not the best. I don't have to be the loudest.
Let me ask you something. You may ask you something with you. Yeah. You had two sisters?
One.
One sister. She was an older sister or younger sister?
Older.
How do you feel towards her?
I love her to death. I wanted to go everywhere she did, wear her clothes, and be in her company all the time. She hated me.
Yeah, she hated you. So what happened to that relationship?
Well, we got older. As we got older, I had different friends, and I had one friend who basically lived her life for about 6 years before I got a handle on my actual self.
So did you remember, did you hear the program at the beginning when I talked about the echo personality?
Yeah.
Kate, that's kind of what you're talking about. You lived your friend's life. First, you loved your sister, and you were living your sister's life. And then you loved your friend, and you were living your friend's life. And then you found a man, and you were attracted to this man, and you were living for that romance as well. So there's a part of you that is kind of a magnet, pardon the expression, to the thing next door. You're a magnet for narcissists. They look at you and they say, ah, she's going to try to please me. She's not going to ask for anything.
Mm.
Now, what's missing here is that there's just a tiny bit of you not seeing you. You not having you. You're not available to you. You don't value yourself as much.
Sure.
How did you spend your last birthday?
My last birthday. My shoulders are bunched up into knots with stress and annoyance. And
right now?
No, during my birthday in February.
And why was it? Why were your shoulders bunched up in stress on your birthday?
Just a whole bunch of things. A family member passed away on my birthday. Then everybody's making plans to all come to my house. Nobody wants to wash blankets, so these people have something to clean on. No one's going to cook. No one's going to clean anything. Basically, they'll just wait for me to do it.
So they didn't honor you on your birthday?
No, not in the least.
Okay, and did you honor? Did you ever honor you on your birthday?
Oh, I did go to get a massage.
Okay, good. Good. Great. Okay, Hope, we have now some hope. Hope, when you went to get that massage, when did you do that? On your birthday?
Yeah.
Okay, now that was February what day?
6th.
February 6th, so that's April, May, June. So June 6th, April, March, April, May. So this is it, 4 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be 4 months after your birthday, exactly, on June 6th, which is what day? Is that tomorrow or today or Friday? Yeah, June 6th, that's going to be
Friday.
It's your next birthday. You know what you need? You need to give yourself another massage. Now, here's the way it works. Every 4 months on your birthday, which is we're going to make it 3 times a year, you're going to give yourself a present. I need you to give yourself a gift. Now, I need you to give yourself a second gift. I need you to buy yourself a doll.
A doll?
A doll.
Okay.
I want you to find a doll that you look at that you feel is special. And I don't mean it doesn't have to be any do anything except somehow it has to look like and feel like you. And I want you to keep it around and I want you to talk to it. Because what I'm hoping you do is to develop the child part of you and for you to nurture the child part of you so it gets it from you instead of looking to get it from the outside in the meager way that it did. So Hope, my desire here is for you to go out and take care of yourself and give yourself and treat yourself as if you're special, you know? So what we need is on your birthday, which is going to be June 6th, is your next birthday, we want you to get a massage, and we're looking for you to buy that doll. Now, would you do me a favor after you get that doll? Would you call me back or email me? Now, you could email me, Armand@BrainLink, BrainLink.com, and I will give you further instructions on what to do with that doll. About how you could turn that doll into a healing tool for yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for
talking.
Okay, Hope. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Enough time for one more call. Let's grab one. Hi, you're on the air. Okay, that's all. We don't have enough time. We don't have enough time for more, and so we won't take any more calls, my friends. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. As we hear from all of our friends, we've been talking about having a thing called entitlement. You see it all around you. I want to question your own entitlement behaviors. Any of you who believe you are entitled and behave in an indignant way with other humans as if you have a right to be treated special, I want you to challenge that. I want you to challenge it and look at it. I do it myself from time to time. I'll stand there waiting in a line and I'll say, hey, what about me? What about me? Pay attention to me. And luckily, with a little help from my friends, I help correct myself. And I'd like you to be able to show people as well and demonstrate, you know, that we're not so special. We don't have to be treated special. The special feeling we have comes from the inside. You know, maybe with a doll, maybe with a massage, maybe just your birthday. Hey, I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with more of this interesting and fascinating and wonderful stuff. If you want to hear a copy of today's program, you can go to WBAI.org, or you could go to my website, thepositivemind.com, and you could hear the program again. You can even send it on to your friends. Here's some piano of Ray Charles.